The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I'm so scared right now, more than I ever thought I could be. I'm scared for myself, my baby, but most of all, I'm scared for John. It's been 2 days now, and I still haven't seen or heard from him. I've tried asking the guy at the front desk if he's heard from the ranger, but nothing. God, wherever you are, John, please be okay. It all happened so fast. One moment, everything was peachy keen, snuggled up under the nice, soft blankets, fast asleep for once. Something that doesn't happen too often when 2 months pregnant. Expecting at any moments to feel John's firm, yet gentle arms embrace me, letting me know that he was home from another night in the woods. 2 nights ago, however, I was violently shaken awake. Loretta. It was dark, and I could barely register his voice. Loretta. This time, he barked my name a little more abrasively, causing me to jolt a bit. Come on, honey. We have to go. Now. I could tell by now that something wasn't right. He'd never spoken to me like this before, and I could hear him breathing heavily. When I turned over and clicked on the light, my heart nearly stopped dead. His clothes were in tatters, and he had scratches all over him, as well as what looked like teeth marks from some wild animal. I almost screamed. Oh my God, John, what is going on? I said, now, come on, he shouted, cutting me off. I was frozen, both from shock and fear. Never once had that man raised his voice to me like this. Even when we'd fight, I was usually the loudmouth, while he was the speak soft and carry the bigger stick type. Don't just sit there staring like an idiot. Get moving. Sure enough, my stupor was broken, and I made my way out of the bed. Start unpacking the dresser. Grab a few changes of clothes. We may be gone for a good while. My head spun furiously. What the hell was going on? Why do we have to leave? Where are we going? Does he even know? Why is he covered in scratches? How long are we going to be gone? I finally managed to stammer out, panicked, and still somewhat half asleep. He rubbed his face and said through his palms, God, I don't know. Just come on, get moving. I shambled to the dresser as he stomped down the hall. I started opening the drawers and slowly pulling out the neatly folded clothes and setting them on the bed. Soon he returned with our vacation suitcases. Here, just throw them in, he said, snatching a handful and tossing it haphazardly into my suitcase. I noticed as he continued to cram our clothes in the suitcase that he was shaking, like at any second he would explode. I pleaded, Johnny, what is it? What's... As I went to try and put my hand on his shoulder to calm him down, he batted my hand away. Not now! Startled, I retracted my hand away like I'd just touched the hot ring of the stove. He looked at me like he'd just committed a murder. His eyes were bulging and were covered in large red veins. My eyes began to burn, and I could feel tears filling them up. He winced and buried his face in his palms again. God... Loretta, I'm so sorry. I could hear his voice shaking when he said that. Now the tears were in full swing. on top of the confusion as to why we had to leave in the dead of nights like fugitives. Now, I was petrified with the thoughts of something out in the woods that's making my husband break down like this. Keep in mind, John Redwood was not one to frighten easily. For starters, the man was built like a lumberjack, almost all muscle as well. He was also very much an outdoorsman, always spending most of his downtime in the woods. It was half the reason we even bought this house in the mountains of Jackal's Peak. Now add in the fact that he's also a full-time bouncer at the nearby tavern, especially known for dealing with the larger-sized patrons who became unruly, and you'd see how chilling it was seeing him in that moment, utterly terrified for dear life. His trembling turned into violent spasms. I almost thought he'd driven himself straight into a heart attack. "John, please," I squeaked, my voice broken. "Talk to me. What's going on? What happened out there?" His face remained in his palms, and I thought I heard him mumble something along the lines of, "They're coming, over and over." "Who? Who's coming?" He brought his face up and looked at me, his face red and puffy, and replied, "The pack." "Who?" He rubbed his face again before saying, "Look, there are things about me I haven't told you, and for good reason. Right now, I need you to just trust me and do what I say." Frightened as I was, I couldn't take those cryptic responses anymore. "Then talk to me. What's going on? Who is the pack, and what do they want?" His body started jerking more and more. You'd have thought a demon was trying to possess him. Suddenly, he roared, "Why can't you just listen to me?" This made me shrink again. This time, it wasn't just that he'd screamed at me again, but rather because of the way his voice sounded. I can't really explain it, but it was like his voice was distorting somehow, getting deeper and sounding more subhuman. It actually caused my heart to skip a few beats, as it seemed to resonate through my body. His face then winced and twisted, like he was in pain. I didn't know what to do or say anymore. "Just please, Loretta," he forced out through gritted teeth. That was when I heard the sounds of howling coming from outside. Judging from how loud and clear I could make them out, it wasn't far away from our house. "Jesus," John whispered. "They're here." In an instant, he grabbed my shoulders tightly. It actually hurt a bit how tightly he had me. His terrified eyes locked onto mine, and he shook me more violently than ever before as he spoke. "Loretta, I love you. I love you, and I love this baby more than anything in this godforsaken world. I would never let anything in this world take that away from me." He was briefly interrupted by a sharp seizure of pain. "But I need you to do as I say. I have to get you out of here." Just then, I heard the howling again, this time much closer. I could hear it from all around the house. "Get down," he ordered. I ducked down to my hands and knees as he quickly clicked the lamp off. "Stay low and don't make a sound. We're going to have to go out through the cellar." I began crawling out of the bedroom as quickly as possible while still trying to stay quiet. The hallway was still dark, and my eyes had to take a minute to readjust as I crawled towards the basement door at the other end. I could now hear what sounded like scratching coming from the front door in the living room. Another series of howls almost caused my heart to burst. I froze in place. "What is that? Wolves?" While he told me before that there were wolves in Jackal's Peak, I was told they usually stayed closer to the top of the mountain range, in the more densely forested area. "What are they doing down here?"
"Keep moving,"
I heard from behind me. It was John, also crawling on his hands and knees. I only got about another 2 feet or so further, however, when I heard a crash that sent the door straight off its hinges. I couldn't hold back a scream at that.
"Go, Run! John shouted, shoving me forward. I clumsily bolted the last little bits to the door and threw it open. From the living room, I could hear the sounds of snarled growling. It sounded deeper and bigger than any wolf or dog I'd ever heard before. I could hear stampeding footsteps coming straight for the hallway. Instantly, I threw myself into the cellar with John right behind me. As he was trying to close the door, a blow from the other side sent him tumbling backwards.
John!
I was about to rush over to him when he shot out his hand, stopping me.
Just go!
Just then, my blood froze solid when I watched the door get ripped right off the wall. Silhouetted in the doorway, I saw what looked like a gigantic wolf, its ears perked up and standing on its hind legs and staring straight at me with glowing, burning orange eyes. It was massive, standing at least 7 to 8 feet tall, covered with pitch-dark fur with long, lean, muscular arms and a vulpine muzzle with long, jagged teeth. Soon, another just like it joined its side before simultaneously howling to the air. This time, it was almost deafening, and I think I actually felt my eardrums pop.
I said run, now.
His voice was further distorted now. As I turned to run for the hatch leading to the backyard, I could hear one of the creatures leap forward and crash land just a couple inches behind me. That was the fire in my chest that had me essentially springing to the other end of the cellar, with it right on my heels. About a few feet away from the cellar, I felt its claws slash my back, and I fell face down. Extreme pain shot all through my body. More than that, however, I was worried that I may have hurt the baby with my fall. Unfortunately, I couldn't think about any of that, because the next thing I knew, I felt it grab my ankle and drag me backwards. I almost tore out my nails, feebly trying to keep from being pulled towards the beast. It was no use, however. Even as skinny as it looked, it was strong, enough so that when it dragged me close enough, it was able to hoist me up one-handed by my right leg. It brought me right up to eye level before bursting out a terrifying roar in my face. I squirmed and tried frantically to kick myself free. Finally, as it unhinged its jaw, John bashed it over the head with a metal rod. The creature retracted, roaring and howling in pain, before hurling me into the wall. I felt my ribs crack when I crashed into the wall. My vision started blurring as I tried to catch my breath. When I looked up again, there the beast was, stomping towards me, its growling sounding noticeably more irritated. I tried to get up, but the pain in my ribs made it difficult to do much in the way of movement. It was almost right up on me again when, out of nowhere, John sprang up from behind and wrapped his arms around its throat. My eyes were 2 seconds from shooting straight from their sockets when I saw this.
Get out of here!
Despite the beast thrashing around worse than a mechanical bull, he held on tight to its throat. Eventually, it was about to break his hold and hurl him away too. By then, I was able to shamble to the cellar door and began climbing the ladder. I could hear it stomping towards me, and I all but flew up the ladder. Once I made it out, I quickly bolted the hatch. I knew it wouldn't hold long, but I figured it'd be enough to get away. Not even a moment after doing this, I saw the hatch begin to splinter and bow outwards. Luckily, I was still able to make it to the car when I heard the sounds of them darting for me from behind. Right as I'd gotten into the front seat and was able to shut the door, another one of them leapt onto the roof of the car, causing it to cave inwards. Before I could get the door shut, it wedged its massive clawed paw in between them and wrapped them around the frame. I tried to pry them loose, and when that didn't work, I tried to open and shut the door again. Big mistake. As soon as I opened the door, the beast grabbed me by my arm and tried to jerk me from the driver's seat. I quickly went to reach for the glove compartment for the 9mm John had stashed for his trips to the range. I wasn't able to reach far enough from the beast's grasp on my arm to open it. Only far enough for me to brush it with my fingertips as I was being forcefully pulled upwards towards the roof of the car. All of a sudden, I heard the sound of a shotgun blast ringing out from the passenger side of the car. The next thing I knew, I felt it release my arm, and I was able to close the door. Looking to my right, there was John, standing in the front yard, loading another round into the shotgun he inherited from his father. He raised up to aim for another shot when I saw one of the other two charge up behind him. With a giant leap, it brought him down before he could get the shot off. That's when the one on the roof decided to join in with its partner in devouring my husband. As the other one skulked closer, I could see John was struggling fiercely against the one holding him down, attempting to use the shotgun as a barrier to hold the beast and its ravenous jaws back. Thinking quickly, I pulled the keys in the ignition and threw it into drive before flooring it. Sure enough, it worked, and the one in front of me was sent to the ground. The one on top of John now fixed its enraged, glowing eyes on me. It let go of him and raised back on its hind legs before letting out an ear-shattering howl to the air. I put the car in reverse and back into drive again, ready to ram it as I had the other one, when it bounded through the air and landed right on the hood of the car. Immediately, it sent a giant hand crashing through the windshield and attempted to grab me. As I hysterically went for a second's time for the gun in the glove compartment, I felt its claws wrap tightly around my throat, squeezing tighter and tighter. I could feel the air being forced from my lungs, and the beast's face began to blur. I tried as hard as I possibly could to pry its fingers from around my throat, but it was no good. As my sight started to darken, I thought about my baby, all the memories that now would never happen. Before I could finish suffocating me, I heard something strike the beast's head that caused it to immediately release my throat. It was John, using the butt of the shotgun to bludgeon the beast, causing it to snap in half. "I told you, you mutt. You can't have her." I was relieved, yet confused at the same time. What was he talking about? For a second, I remembered what he'd told me about. Things I don't know about him. Things he never told me. Did he somehow know about these things? I wasn't given time to think any further about that, though. John ducked down, dodging a massive swipe of the beast's claw before clambering into the passenger seat. Immediately, he went for the glove compartment and drew the 9mm. "Floor it." He sent 6 rounds straight in between its eyes, and it staggered back and off the car. "Come on, get this thing moving," he barked, snapping me from my daze. I threw the car into reverse again as I saw the beast staring back at me, its eyes now burning and enraged. It reared back to pounce just as I was swerving to turn around into the street, causing it to slam face first into the right door of the back seat. The car was shaken almost to the point of turning over on its side with the impact, and the door was caved inwards. Fortunately, that seemed to knock the beast dizzy, as I chanced a quick look back and saw that it was staggering around. Before it had had the chance to regain its bearings, I peeled out to the front yard and slammed on the accelerator down the street. We were flying down the mountain pass at least 65, going on 70 miles an hour. I couldn't bring myself to slow down. My mind was bouncing erratically with 10 million thoughts at once. What if they're following? What if there's more of them? Out here in the dense woods? What the hell even are they? What do they want? What was John talking about when he said they couldn't have me? I was cut off when I felt John jerk the wheel to the left. When I was aware again, I saw that he'd just narrowly kept us from careening off the side of Jackal's Peak, a 2,500-foot drop. Once we were safely back on the pass again, we pulled over and stopped the car. For almost 5 minutes, neither one of us could do or say anything, just sat there trying to catch our breath and steady our heartbeats. John was the first to break the silence. "All right, here's what we're gonna do. You remember the old motel we stayed at last week? The one with the hot tub out back?" I remained quiet. "We're gonna go there, and you're gonna check in for a few days. I'm gonna sort everything out with the house. I'll come back and let you know when it's clear to come back." My teeth clenched, and my knuckles turned white around the steering wheel. "Oh, sure. And I'm just supposed to take that as my reassurance that you'll come back. And I'm just not supposed to bother asking what in the name of God happened back there, right?" I felt myself spiraling into the usual screaming psycho mode I mentioned before. But this time I knew I had every right in the world, and more to be. Judging from the sunken, sullen look in his eyes, I could tell he felt the same.
Loretta,
no, I shouted, cutting him off. I don't want to hear any more of your cryptic, cockamamie excuses. I want answers, and I want them now. Admittedly, I was a little more abrasive than I'd meant to be with that little last bit. But again, was I not justified? For a moment, he just sat there, staring back at me, figuring I'd frightened him, and rightfully so. I pressed further. Well? Again, he said nothing, just sat there looking guilty. Wow, I scoffed. I was utterly baffled, somehow even more so than I was earlier. 3 years ago, I'd been married to this man, and I find out that he'd been keeping secrets from me. Not only that, but apparently secrets that have now put the lives of me and him in very real danger. Not to mention our incoming child. And now, to top that all off, he can't even have the decency to at least try and tell me what's going on. He opened his door and began to get out of the car. I nearly saw red. Oh, and exactly where the hell do you think you're going? Immediately, I threw open the driver's door and got out, stomping towards him. So that's just it. You're just gonna walk away. You're not even gonna say anything or explain or justify what just happened. Why a bunch of things just broke into our home and almost tore us apart. What is going on? What the hell are you so afraid of?
Loretta, please, not now,
he shouted. I wasn't about to back down that easily, though.
Why? Why can't you just talk to me? Your wife. For God's sake, just tell me what's going on.
I said enough,
he roared. This time his voice sounded almost subhuman, and I felt all of my stamina to keep from pushing him away. He stood at the ledge, profusely shaking and twitching. I felt so small standing there, facing his back. I felt the tears well up in my eyes again, and I couldn't help but to squeak out a small sob.
Please, just listen to me, Loretta,
he said in a shaking, almost completely growling voice. I watched as his body continued to convulse. I thought he was in the middle of a seizure or a stroke.
John,
I softly whispered, I love you, and I love our baby. I'm so sorry that it came to this. I never wanted to allow you to get hurt. I never wanted you to have to be a part of any of this.
Of what?
I cried. It felt like in 2 seconds flat, I was going to end up dropping into a full-blown panic attack. I made an agreement a long time ago with the pack that people I loved, people like you, would be left alone if I brought them offerings. That's why I've been in the woods a lot. I stood there, jaw slacked, in the middle of trying to fully register what he'd just said, while also trying to decide if he was telling the truth. It was easy at first. Just a couple of small farm animals and the woodland critters here and there. His body jerked so violently now as he spoke that I could see his knees shaking, threatening at any moment to buckle from beneath him. After a sharp groan of pain, he continued.
Eventually, it wasn't enough anymore. They kept wanting bigger and bigger morsels. Tonight, they wanted me to offer them. He hesitated, still spasming. They wanted me to offer them a baby.
I was now hopeless, lost, and confused.
What the hell is he talking about?
And none of what he was saying was making sense to me. Or maybe it did, deep down, and I was just too afraid to admit it to myself then.
I couldn't do it,
he said, his voice shaking even worse now.
I couldn't do it. And now they want to punish me by going after you.
Another spasm caused him to finally fall to his knees. Instantly, my instincts kicked in, and I rushed over to him. That's when he looked back,
and bellowed in a now completely unrecognizable voice.
No. Stay back.
I once again stopped dead in my tracks. My heart almost stopped when I saw his eyes. They were now a pulsating, burning orange. Another series of the most violent jerks I'd seen before erupted throughout his entire body, causing him to seize and cry out in pain. For the next minute, I watched frozen in terror as John's body seemed to break and reshape itself. I could hear bones breaking, and his muscles somehow began to swell in size, tearing through his plaid shirt. Before too much longer, I could see his face start to poke outwards, and his nose deformed and reformed itself into what resembled the muzzle of a dog. His body began to be covered in thick, silver hair or fur. I was too frozen in terror to even scream. Once the metamorphosis was finished, and John no longer looked like, well, like John anymore, it raised up on its hind legs before blasting an aggressive howl up to the night sky. The intensity caused me to collapse to my knees and press my ears as tightly as possible. When I opened my eyes again, whatever it was leering down at me, snarling and baring its long, jagged teeth.
John?
I squeaked, shuddering. Nothing. He just stood there, growling at me like he was ready to pounce. I slowly began stepping back towards the car. Just take it slow. It took a staggering step forward towards me, before going down on all fours and continuing. For a second, I froze, just waiting for him to leap for the kill.
John. John, please.
I knew it was no use, but I couldn't help it. A very small part of me was still somehow expecting to wake up from this. I'd be woken up with the smell of pancakes, bacon, and fresh coffee in the morning, and I'd rush down to the kitchen and squeeze John until he started to suffocate, like how I was earlier in the front yard. And we'd laugh all morning at such a strange dream. He crept closer and closer to me. When I started backwards again, something caught the heel of my foot, and I fell. He was now right on top of me. I could feel its hot, snarled breath in my face. When I saw him begin to unhinge his jaws, I closed my eyes, trying to picture me and him, holding our baby, the family they'd never be.
I love you, John.
I opened my eyes just a bit. I opened my eyes just a bit. He was still in front of me. It almost sounded like he was trying to say something.
Run.
That's when he started growling and lowering himself like he was about to attack. I still wasn't 100% sure I actually had heard him speak. Maybe it was still just all wishful thinking. But that didn't keep me from obeying when I started hearing the growls come from behind me as well. When I turned around, I saw that the other two from the house had somehow followed us and were closing in around me. I sprang up and darted for the car. I saw one of the others bound for me, attempting to cut me off. John caught it in the air and pinned it down. They began to wrestle like two rabid dogs in a cage on the ground. The partner then charged full speed towards me. I made it to the car and immediately turned the engine over. I hesitated for a moment and looked back to John. He was now on the ground with the other one biting at his throat. I almost wanted to try running it over again to try and help John. But that was when the other one jumped onto the roof of the car. I slammed the accelerator and started flying further down the pass. I tried swerving left and right violently to shake the beast off the roof of the car, but it had its claws anchored into it, and I couldn't. I started hearing the grinding of its claws tearing into the metal. It was going to tear the roof off. Eventually, a very stupid idea formed in my mind. It was almost certifiably suicidal, but it was the only thing I had. With a sharp jerk of the wheel,
The car swerved over to the edge of the pass before hammering the brakes. Sure enough, this managed to actually throw the beast off and hurling it over the edge, tearing half of the roof clean off as it went. The front wheels were hanging off the edge. I quickly put the car into reverse and managed to inch my way back onto the pass. From there, I made a beeline for the bottom of the mountain. I knew that I'd need at least to see a doctor, if not a surgeon, but to me, that could wait. Right then, I was more worried about John. I figured once I got to the motel, I could maybe call the local rangers or the state troopers or something to send someone out there for him. The road felt like it wouldn't end, despite the fact that I knew it actually only stretched for about another few miles from where I'd started from. A small wave of relief swept over me when I finally reached the turnoff, seeing the large, bright green sign reading, "Welcome to Jaggles Peak." After that, the motel was just around the corner. I pulled into the empty parking lot, not even into an actual space, and stumbled drunkenly out of the car. It was completely quiet, but the lights in the lobby were still on. I still remember the guy's face when he saw me. Ma'am, are you okay? His eyes looked like he was staring at a dead body, which, to be fair, I probably didn't look far from it at the time.
I need...
Here, he said, getting up from his chair and walking towards me. Come sit down. He guided me over to the torn, beaten-up sofa in the lobby. Just sit there for a second. I got a first aid kit here in the back. I was sitting down when I realized that I didn't have my purse with me. I had no way of paying for a room. Not only that, but that also killed any ideas of calling for help, as my phone was also in my purse. I started to feel dizzy by this point from the way my head was spiraling. When he came back around 30 seconds later, first aid kit in hand, he asked me if he needed to call an ambulance.
No, but could I use your phone?
Sure, it's in the back, but why don't we get those cuts looked at first, yeah? I nodded, and he started treating my wounds. If you don't mind me asking, ma'am, how'd you get so banged up? You fall hiking the mountain or something? I just blankly shook my head. Somebody after you? Again, I just shook my head.
No.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to be nosy. Just some pretty bad ones you got there. He finished up before leading me to the phone in the back. Let me know if there's anything else I can do to help, he said, before leaving me with the phone. The first thing I did was to call the local ranger station. To my luck, I was only on hold for a minute before the call was connected.
Terrence County Ranger Station. What's the nature of your call?
My husband, he's...
I could hardly slow down enough to form a proper sentence.
Ma'am, can you repeat that for me?
My husband is hurt. He's stuck on the mountain pass. You have to send somebody out here.
All right, calm down, ma'am. Can you tell me your name?
I cleared my throat and told him my name.
Loretta Redwood.
He then asked me for John's name.
John Redwood.
And you said you last left him somewhere on the pass?
Yeah, at the 30-mile marker. Please, sir, he's hurt. You gotta send somebody out here.
He went on to ask me my current location, and I gave him the name of the motel. He told me that he was dispatching a unit to me, as well as one to the location I gave them before hanging up. 10 minutes later, they showed up and took my statement. When they asked what it was that attacked us, I told them that it was a pack of wild coyotes. Surprisingly, they actually bought it, despite it being an extremely piss-poor lie. I declined their offer to be taken to the hospital. Like I said, I was fully aware that my wounds and the possible damage to the baby might have been severe. That said, something compelled me to stay put at the motel. He said he'd come back for me. Again, this was 2 nights ago. The ranger told me to keep an ear out and he'd let me know when they found him. The guy at the motel, bless him, is letting me stay in an unused room for free until they send word on John. I was essentially glued next to the phone in the back most of the daytime yesterday and today. It was this morning, seeing the front page of the Terrence Ledger, the guy brought in with his early morning breakfast run, that I very nearly had a heart attack. Large canine found dead in the middle of Road Pass in Jekyll's Peak. I couldn't hold back a scream, startling the poor guy while he was eating. I bolted back to the room and immediately locked the door before burying my face in the pillow like I was 14 again, and just letting everything loose. I refused to believe it, and I still do. It may not be him, right? It's just the other one, right? Please, please, John, don't let that be you. I'm in the back room right now, typing this out on the guy's computer as I'm waiting. Just waiting for that phone to ring and hear the ranger tell me that my Johnny is okay. That he's coming back and that we can go home. That's all I want, to have my husband back and to go home. I don't even care about the stuff he keeps from me, or that he's some sort of man, wolf, monster. I just want my Johnny back. Please, John. Please come back.